Side Hustle Show 222, 5 real estate side hustles you can start on the cheap.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where it's all about ideas, action, and results. Today, I want to share some ideas on how to get started making money in real estate beyond some of the wholesaling and traditional rental strategies we've talked about in the past. Now, I've got a love-hate relationship with real estate. I got lucky once, but I've made some dumb moves since then, and those have kind of soured my desire to get back into direct property ownership. Now, whether you've had a similar experience or you just don't think you have the cash required to get started, this conversation with Chad Carson might change your mind. He's going to outline some lower risk and lower capital ways to get started earning the traditional trifecta of real estate benefits, being cash flow, appreciation, and tax advantages. Now, Chad started his real estate investing adventures straight out of college with just $1,000 to his name. He went from playing football for your national champion Clemson Tigers to using some of the strategies outlined in this episode to begin building his own real estate empire, which now stands at over 90 rental units co-managed with his business partner. He blogs about this stuff over at CoachCarson.com. Excellent site with tons of info over there, CoachCarson.com. Now he's in his mid-30s. Chad just up and moved to Ecuador for a year with his wife and two daughters because when you're a semi-retired real estate mogul, you can do that sort of thing. Notes, links, and a free PDF highlight reel with all of Chad's top tips from this conversation are at SideHustleNation.com/Chad. Before we dive in, let me take a moment to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks.com. The all-new FreshBooks is transforming how freelancers, side hustlers, and small business owners deal with their day-to-day paperwork. The award-winning cloud accounting software has been redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for exactly the way we work. Visit FreshBooks.com/sidehustle to start your 30-day free trial today. We'll be back to tell you a little bit more about FreshBooks, plus my top takeaways from this chat with Chad after the interview. The first real estate side hustle Chad shares is something he calls house hacking. Ready? Let's do it.
It's not my term. I don't know who made it. I know Brandon Turner of Bigger Pockets talks about it a lot, but it's sort of a industry shorthand. But it always kind of, I think it turns some people off when they first hear it. They're like, what are you hacking into? You're like breaking into somebody's house, trying to make some money, you know, what is this? So that's like the first thing I say. There's nothing illegal about house hacking. It's nothing like crazy that basically what you're doing, and this is really the technique I try to recommend across the board to more people than any other real estate technique, because it's basically you're turning your residence. So particularly people kind of young in your career, if you're 20s, 30s, or at any point when you're just trying to kind of grow your wealth, you live in a small multi-unit property typically. And so maybe a duplex, a triplex, a quadruplex. And so you move into that, you get your financing like you always would, your owner-occupant financing, often with a smaller down payment and really good interest rates with owner-occupant loans. And then the magic happens, though, is that you rent out that second or third or fourth unit, and the income that those produce either pay for part of your mortgage payment, or in the case, like some examples I've had for my own house hacks, I was actually living positive $100 a month in my residence.
Basically getting paid to live there. Okay.
Yeah. So it's sort of a hybrid between your kind of housing, just regular old housing that you live in, and having a rental property. And I know there's a lot of debates in kind of like the financial blogging circles about, you know, you should never, home ownership's awful. You know, you should never live in, it's the worst financial mistake you could ever make. And then other people, you know, argue against that. And I think this is one of those sort of happy compromises. And I've always looked at my investing very entrepreneurially, which is why I love your podcast and everything you do about kind of side hustles and business. Because just say that somebody's in there 22 years old, which is kind of what I was when I first started house hacking. And you have to live somewhere. And so your option is to go rent something. And that's a lot of people do that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And save up your money and invest it somewhere else. Your other option is to kind of follow the quote American dream and buy your 3-bedroom, 2-bath house with a 2-car garage, brand new, put 20% down and pay top retail price for a nice house that you can get comfortable in for the next 10 to 20, 30 years. That's kind of the other extreme. And house hacking is, I think, a much wiser choice than either one of those, because you're getting some investment benefits from your residence. And if you just look at the future value, you know, just plug in like a future value calculator and say, what if you were going to be paying $1,000 a month for your mortgage payment on that house? And instead you were able to reduce that down to zero or to $250 a month because you did a house hack. Think of all the things you can do with that extra $750 to $1,000 per month. I mean, what kind of business can you start? What kind of investments can you make? What kind of job could you do because that you would have had to do? You know, you can do your dream job that makes less money, but that's what you want to do. So that's kind of how I see house hacking. It's a way to hack that huge housing bill that everybody has. And then also down the road, you can move out of that 2 or 3 years from now and turn that into a good rental property that's solid and cash flows and kind of use that as a long-term investment as well.
Are there some metrics that you're looking at when you're evaluating these things, or what kind of numbers should people aim for? And I guess it probably varies market to market, but yeah, I know you have, so like you said, you were up $100 a month on yours and it was a fourplex.
It was a fourplex. And I'll give you a rule of thumb. And that's always the disclaimer is like, I get people email me from like UK and Canada and California, like your numbers in South Carolina are ridiculous. Nobody yeah. can ever, we, that was 100 years ago when we bought houses for your prices. And I said, yeah, that's true. But the house hacking principle works. The only question is whether it's going to pay for all of your payment because you're living in a really less, more kind of reasonable rent to price ratio market, like in the, you know, the middle of the United States, the Midwest, the South, the suburbs of bigger cities. I think you can typically look for those kind of numbers. Where in the bigger cities, I think it might be even more imperative though, because why pay $3,000 or $2,000 for a mortgage payment or for rent when you could cut that in half maybe with using the rent from the other side? And so the metric I would use though, with that disclaimer, is if in an ideal world, there's something called like just a rule of thumb called the 1% rule. The 1% rule says that if you look at the rent that a property brings in, and I'll use my quadruplex that I lived in as an example. Each one of those units rented when I bought it for $400 per month. That was, you know, 10 years ago.
Okay.
And so the goal I would have would be to have that rent be 1% of the total investment I have in that property. And so like the simple math is $400 per month is the per unit rent. I would want to have no more than $40,000 invested per unit. Or since this is a fourplex, I would want to have no more than $160,000 invested. As a house hack, that can get you pretty close to living for free or cheap if you had those kind of numbers. And that's going to depend on the property taxes and what jurisdiction you're in. Some costs might be different from place to place, but that's a pretty good target. If you can do that, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And yeah. So that's just something people can look at and think about.
Okay. So in preparation for this call, like I was looking around our local area for duplexes and, you know, multi-unit properties like this. And it seems like they were already all subdivided out. Like, so there are some duplexes, but like they're sold as individual units. Like you couldn't buy the whole house, or maybe you could, but you'd have to have both owners like selling at the exact same time.
Yeah.
So it's like, they've already gone to this. So some friends of ours do this just with their own house, basically following the model of buying more house than you need and then renting out that extra space. And they happen to do it on a long-term basis, but you could absolutely do it on Airbnb basis, or, you know, kind of rent out that extra space, extra bedroom, that mother-in-law unit. So that's definitely something that we're going to be looking at in future property acquisitions, although we're happily renting right now. So what kind of financing is available? So, I mean, it's been a long, long time since rent was $400 a month, or you could buy a fourplex for $160,000, but maybe in some parts of the country. Yeah. Are you still looking at 20% down for that? I guess that's probably what keeps a lot of young people renting.
Yeah. So I'll give you a very typical house hacking financing example. And so most people would just go to a mortgage broker or mortgage banker. And the best programs out there, I would think, were house hacking. And I've written an article like showing some links, like more details about those programs if people are interested in them. But like the higher level view is government-backed loans, like FHA is a program that people might be familiar with, Federal Housing Administration loans. They've got a really good owner-occupant loan where you move into the property, I think it's a 3.5% down payment.
Okay.
But there's a program they have, like an add-on to the FHA loan called, I think it's a 203K rehab loan, a remodel loan. And so you could actually, a lot of the best deals you're going to have are going to need kitchen upgrades, or there's going to be something wrong with it for you to be able to get a discount off the full price. And mm-hmm. So if the question is, where do you come up with all that money, or how do you get a good return on that money? And so these FHA loans will let you kind of build that in the purchase price. So let's say you buy it for $200,000, buy a duplex, but you're going to need to do $30,000 worth of repairs to make it up the rents a little bit or something to make it work. You could build that into the loan, and you'll have to hire contractors and kind of make that part of your application. But it's very doable to be able to get in with a pretty light down payment. Of course, you're going to run the numbers ahead of time to make sure that's a financially feasible thing to do, but you could get into it really light and then also have some of the remodeling costs paid for. And so I think that's a great, there's also a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac kind of loan that's very similar to that FHA loan that does the same thing. They pay for your remodel costs.
Oh, okay.
So if anybody's interested in that, I would kind of start there and look at those loan programs. So that's kind of part A of your answer. Part B is what I did, which is a little bit different. I bought a pretty big fixer-upper. And so you know, I had to spend $45,000 in addition to what I paid for it. I bought it for $70,000. I had to put $45,000 into it.
This was the $400 a month per unit fourplex?
Exactly. Yes.
You got some pictures on your site. It was an ugly looking building, man.
Yeah. It had Merry Christmas spray painted across the whole front of the building. Like, you know, I showed up, I said, man, this is something else. And I'm pretty sure if I remember right, there were like chalk lines of bodies in like some of the living rooms. But, you know, so the rule of thumb in real estate is to buy like the worst looking house in a decent neighborhood. And so this was on the bus line to Clemson University where I live. And so it was my wife and I ended up moving into this place when we got married. I bought it before we got married and we lived there for 2 or 3 years and we would walk downtown from there. So like it wasn't a dangerous location or anything. It was just some landlord had totally neglected this property and let it run down over years. And that's where your best opportunities are. The ugly ones smell bad. And
okay.
So if you get into real estate, you got to get past that initial revulsion of like, oh, this place is horrible. It smells bad.
Yeah.
And the worse it smells, the better, because you're kind of driving people, other competition away. And you can solve that. A bad smell is basically just ripping. You could rip out the floorboards and the carpet and you could rip out the subfloor and replace that for a few $1,000 and you solved your smell problem. So that's basically what we did. But I was also an entrepreneur. Like I didn't have a good steady W-2 income to be able to go to the bank and be a perfect borrower. So I went to a local bank and they loaned me 80%. And then I used private lenders, basically like individuals locally who were investors and they were willing to loan me the remodeling money. And I paid them an interest rate and second position on that property. And then once I fixed it up, I moved into it. And because I bought it super cheap, after all was said and done with closing costs and everything, I had about $120,000 invested in the property. But the new value of the property with the new rents I had was $155,000.
Okay. Yeah. Really, really close to your 1% rule. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in it for less than the 1% rule, but the 1% rule was about the value of this property.
Yeah.
And so I refinanced it and I was able to borrow $120,000 and pay off the private money and the local bank loan using a owner-occupant long-term loan that I was able to get at that point.
Yeah. Okay. No, I like this as an interesting way to really reduce your housing expense. Because like you said, that's something that everybody deals with. And for most people, that's the biggest single line item expense. It definitely is for us by a long shot. And so trying to figure out some creative ways to subsidize that in a way with other people's rent in these multi-unit properties or even the spare bedroom thing.
Yep.
Next on the list is live-in flips. And my understanding of this is if I live in a house for 2 years, I can then resell it at no gain. So it's like not the house flipping stuff you see on TV, because it's like a longer or slower term thing. But the advantage is like I'm not paying any tax or any capital gains on that, on the increase in the value there.
Exactly right. So it's, I always tell people like this is the best angle in the US tax code. And I think I've looked up in Canada and UK and some other places, it's very similar. Basically, they give you a break. They want owner occupants to move into properties and fix them up and turn them around. So they've given tax incentives for doing that. And the rule is, if you buy a property that's going to be, let's just say it's a fixer-upper house, maybe it has Merry Christmas spray painted across the front, just like mine did, you move into it. And yes, you're going to slowly fix it up. You have to live in it 2 out of 5 years.
Okay.
A simple scenario would be you live in it for 2 years and you take your time, you look for good deals on cabinets and countertops, and maybe you do some, I'm not really handy myself. I kind of tell everybody, like, I write checks for everything. But I can basically tear a wall out and maybe paint a little bit, but any other skilled work is like not my thing.
Yeah, I could tear it out. I don't know if I can put it back together.
I don't know if I can put that together either. It's kind of like that puzzle, you always lose the last piece or something, you know? But the benefit of that is this is for somebody who's kind of handy or they don't mind living in a place that's not perfect right away. And then you slowly fix it up or you wait until the end to fix it up. And then let's say you bought a property for $200,000. But other houses in the neighborhood equal square footage were selling for $300,000, and you put $30,000, $40,000 into it over 2 years. you could then sell it for $300,000 and make, if it was an investment property purely, you would have to pay capital gains tax on that. But as it, because it's your residence and you lived there 2 out of 5 years, you can make $60,000-$70,000 tax-free. And so I've known people who, there's a blog that I'm friends with, Mr. 1500, 1500days.com. A big portion of their net worth was built initially from doing live-in flips.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't something they were going to do like the rest of their life. Like they want to settle down eventually, but they did. You can do 3 or 4 of these over a 10-year period and build $300,000-$400,000 worth of money without having to pay taxes on it. And for you to go out and earn and save that much or start a business to earn that much, it would take a lot of time and a lot of effort. And so I see it as sort of like a period of your life, whether it's just one like 2 or 3 year period or 6, 7, 8 years of your life, particularly when you're young, 20s and 30s, when you don't mind doing some of that, you can make some really serious money on the side and then kind of settle down after that. And you can even rent after that. You could just own for 10 years, flip some houses, and then go rent or do something else after that.
Yeah, that's a huge buffer to your nest egg right there if you can do that a handful of times and do it well. So again, I was looking locally to see, okay, what might be out there. Just your standard, you know, $600,000 fixer-upper is what I found in our town. But it was significantly undervalued relative to other houses that were selling. And it just, like you said, it was totally livable, just needed some work, needed some updating. And if that's how we wanted to spend our weekends for the next several years, like we could, you know, we could absolutely do that.
Yep.
Now for sourcing these properties, would you go like straight MLS, Redfin, or would you try and find the off-market deals?
Yeah, off-market's always best. When I got my start, I got started buying MLS properties as well. And so you always go there because that's like where a lot of people list their houses. But
yeah,
you're only hitting the tip of the iceberg if you do that. Like if you really want to get serious about finding the best deals, you really have to kind of get out in the neighborhoods and do it yourself a little bit. And there's a long list. I'd be happy to go over other ways to do it. But like my favorite ways are super simple. It's just you look on a map, look on Google Maps, and if you live in a town, you know where the areas are that have older homes that are like the more desirable places to live, where people talk about saying, yeah, that's the place to live. It's close to such and such. It's close to that park, or it's got the greenway going by there. Like you always start with a desirable location. You don't want to like go to some, just because houses are cheap, 2 hours out in a bad location next to a factory. You know, that doesn't mean that's not a good flipping house. You want to start in a good location, but then you got to go look for the diamonds in the rough in those locations. And what I like to do, this is kind of the tried and true method, is you can get in your car and just drive really slowly through neighborhoods.
Okay.
Yeah. But even better would be, you have a young kid, right? Same way as me.
Yep.
I love just getting some exercise since I've had kids, just pushing the stroller, carrying them on in the carrier. Make it your exercise to walk around neighborhoods. And particularly in the evenings or on Saturday mornings, you will be amazed the different perspective you get when you get on the ground in a neighborhood. And so there's a few things you'll notice. One is that you're going to, every once in a while, it might be one out of a couple hundred houses, but you're going to see these vacant houses sitting there. A house where like that grass has grown up, or you can tell that there's no blinds in the windows. And so you find these little vacant houses and you say, huh, that's interesting. And you know, maybe the neighbor's out cutting their grass next door, and you walk by with your stroller and say, we're looking for a house in this neighborhood. Do you know what's going on with this one? Are they looking to sell?
Okay.
And you'll be amazed, like neighbors will spill the beans, like, yes, so-and-so moved over there, or they got in a divorce. They'll just tell you everything. And at the end you can say, well, you have a way I can get in touch with them? I might be interested in buying it. Oh yeah, here's their phone number. It's kind of just like that. It sounds super simple, but I tell people that all the time. And there's so few people who are willing to do that. Like everybody's looking on MLS, that's fine. But it has to do with hustle. You know, you got to get out there. And you got to find a way to like fit into your schedule. Everybody's busy, but you can exercise, you can walk, you can spend 3 or 4 hours on a weekend. You can do a little bit of Google searching and Redfin and MLS too, but just doing that, and maybe on a 3 or 4 hour time on a Saturday morning, you find 5 vacant houses, you find 3 for sale by owners. You might have a list of like 10 properties that are interesting, and you'll either call that property, you'll drop them a note in the mail, like look up their mailing address online somehow. You just try to reach out. Now, over the years, 15 years, I've sent lots of little handwritten notes out, and that's been the most effective way I've bought properties that nobody else knows are for sale.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, that's similar to the best passive income model guy, the raw land flipping guy. It's like, you know, cross-referencing these lists of basically vacant lots or, you know, parcels of land with out-of-state owners and back tax, you know, who owes back taxes. And then just like you said, sending them a letter, sending them an offer. It's kind of a numbers game, but you eventually get some takes or get some hits. So
yeah.
Okay. I like that one. Cool way to kind of build up that nest egg tax-free. I'm thinking, hindsight is 2020. We could have done a lot of things differently with regards to real estate.
Hey, we all could. No worries. The other thing I'll say just before we leave that subject is, you know, there's a lot of investors out there who go out and just send letters to people saying, I want to buy their house. If you're doing this as a live and flip or you're doing it as a house hack, you have a huge advantage because you're actually going to live there. And so housing is an emotional thing. You know, people get emotional, even if they inherited a house, it was the house they lived in when they grew up. And I think they want to know that in some ways they want to get a price. You know, it's always money, but there's also an aspect of, is this person going to respect my house and treat it well and take care of it? And if you send a letter, it's like, my wife and I are looking to buy this house. We have a little one-year-old little girl, and we just want a nice place that we could make our own and really put some love and care into it. And we noticed your house there on such and such street. We don't know if you're looking to sell, but if you are, we kind of letter. In the world of direct mail, like getting a 0.5% response is good. But if I send out 10 letters like that, I'm going to get 30, 40, 50% response rate. Even if it's just curiosity, just to say, hey, yeah, it's interesting, got your letter. I'm not looking to sell, but I know so-and-so down the street is looking to sell. Let me give you his number.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I like it. All right, Chad, next on our list is master leasing. Can you tell me what master leasing is all about?
Okay, so everybody's familiar with renting. So if you're renting right now, Nick, you have a lease with your landlord.
Yes.
So what this is basically doing, this is one of my favorite techniques in real estate that's not used very often, is basically you're going to somebody, particularly this is probably a landlord who's not taking care of the property as much. Maybe they're up in years and they're just kind of tired of it or not doing it or whatever. And you approach the landlord, and let's go back to a quadruplex example. Let's say that they had a tenant they had to evict last month, and they just were so tired of it. They haven't even re-rented it yet. The person tore the unit up. And so it's sitting there vacant, and they're just letting it sit. So you could go to that person and say, I'm interested in your property, and I'm used to putting some sweat equity into properties, helping rent them out. Instead of just leasing that one unit, I would be interested in renting the entire building from you. So let's say he's getting $400 per month. I know that was my number earlier. So let's say I would be willing to pay you $1,000 per month, but then I want to have the right to sublease those units out. So instead of you having to go out, Mr. Landlord or Mrs. Landlord, and find new tenants, I'd be willing to guarantee you a lease payment for the next 3 years. And so you will get that whether it's full, whether it's empty. And then I will go find the tenants, and I'll have to try to rent it for more than I'm paying you. And I'll take care of it. I'll put some money into it to kind of clean that unit up and fix it up. I'll paint the outside. And so the benefit to the landlord is, if you're a trustworthy person who knows what you're doing, then they can kind of have a little bit more hands-off landlording relationship with that property. And for you, you're able to get into it pretty light. Instead of you having to go to the bank and put 20% down, you're able to pay the landlord the money.
Yeah, the $1,000 a month. Okay.
$1,000 a month. And then I'll go out and try to rent it for $1,500 total. And so I can make a $500 a month spread using my hustle. You know, I'm going to have to manage the property and do all that. But that's the point, is this is kind of like a side job.
Yeah, but you don't have much downside risk there either. Like if somebody tears up the property, at the end of the day, you still don't own it.
Exactly. And you might, and to be fair to the landlord, you might build in something saying, look, if the tenant tears this up, you have to fix that. And so you're going to need to build in, you're going to need to have a little bit of a reserve. Now, you get the security deposit from your tenant, first of all.
Yeah.
But you also have the risk, if they tear it up, you're going to need to paint the walls up and put it back in the condition that you agree on with the landlord originally. But if the heating and air goes out, you know, the big stuff that costs you a bunch of money in real estate, you have an agreement with that landlord that they're still covering that. They're still paying the taxes and insurance. And it's kind of like a partnership, and you're going to need to find the right seller, the right owner. But again, when you get out there and you get off the MLS and you start talking directly to owners, you can find a lot of people who you negotiate face to face, and you can find some win-win arrangements. You could do, just imagine if you made a business out of master leasing. What if you did 4 or 5 of those, and your job was to manage those 5 buildings, $500 a piece? You know, you can make yourself, you can start building that up and having a nice little income stream from all those without a lot of upfront capital.
Yeah, it sounds similar to just property management, but just kind of pitched in a different way. Instead of like, hey, when it's vacant, you're not going to get paid, but we're going to try and find you a tenant. It's like, no, well, I'm going to pay you all the time, but probably for a bigger fee. Instead of my 7 to 10% property management fee, you know, hopefully you can make a little bit better margin on that.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. You're using your property management skills, but the difference is you actually have a contract with them. So like you're not managing it as an agent. You're managing it as a principal. You own that contract, that master lease with that person. And just so people think this isn't like some wild-eyed kind of crazy idea that nobody ever does, I'll give you a couple examples. There's a parcel of land in my town in Clemson that is like the prime piece of property, like right across from the campus, downtown. A professional company came in and leased that piece of land for like 50 years, or I don't know how long their lease was, but they leased it from the owner. The owner wasn't willing to sell, but they were willing to lease it to him, master lease it to him. And they built, they put a $50 million building on top of that ground lease.
Wow.
And so this is like a kind of a more professional technique. You know, people in Manhattan own ground leases on skyscrapers. The whole skyscraper was built just because they had a lease. They didn't own the property. And so this is not a kind of new technique. This is just, it's kind of new that people think about applying it as a side hustle to something that a little small residential property, but it's a technique that people use in real estate all the time.
Interesting. Actually, now that you bring it up, like a friend of mine was just telling me about doing this for a house in Vietnam, kind of like in this beach town in Vietnam. Uh-huh. And he's like, look, I'm going to rent out your whole house. And with your permission, I'm going to turn around and list it on Airbnb. And so he's making the margin between kind of his long-term lease rate that he's signed up with the landlord and then kind of the short-term vacation rental rate that he's able to get for the house. And he says, like, I think he probably needs, 50% occupancy or something like that to break even. And after that, it's all profit.
Exactly.
But he, manages the guest turnover and kind of does all that stuff. So I was like, there's different angles for this one as well. So
yeah,
that one's pretty cool. That's master leasing. The next one on our list is leasing agent, which my understanding again is like, is this a thing outside of New York where it's like, okay, I got to pay this person to like help me find a tenant for my property?
Yeah. I mean, bigger cities, it's more normal. Like I'm in a little small town and people, it's not as typical to like go out and hire a third party leasing agent for your, like if you were going to go rent a property, you wouldn't hire an agent to go find you a leasing in my town.
Yeah.
But in bigger cities, it's very typical. But it's also what I see this as, and this, we're talking about side hustles. So like this, particularly if you're somebody who's interested in getting into real estate investing, but you don't have a lot of knowledge, you don't have a lot of money. Like the question is, how do I get started without a lot of capital and knowledge? Like, what do you do? And so I think this is a really good idea. If you're going to be a landlord, you need to learn, but it'd be nice to make some money while you're learning. The core part of the rental business is finding tenants, qualifying them, and kind of matching them to a property. Typically, I think in most places I've seen, you would actually go get either a property manager license if your state does that, or just a regular real estate license, which kind of sounds like a big deal, but I think I spent $400 or $500 plus week and a half of classes to do mine. So it was not that big a deal. And you kind of learn about contracts and how they work and how the real estate licensing world works. But once you have that license, you could go out and find, for example, a property manager, or let's say you found a local investor who had 50 properties. And I can promise you, as an investor with a lot of properties, one of the biggest time consuming things is finding tenants. When you put an ad on Craigslist, you put signs out there, put it on Zillow, you get tons and tons of calls and you got to go show the property. And that's just one of the things you have to do. And so as a leasing agent, what you could do is you could say, I'd be willing to go show the property. I'd be willing to kind of hold their hand and get them all the way from the point that they called on the ad all the way to the point that they submit an application. And I'll bring that application to you, Mr. Landlord or Mrs. Landlord. And you can approve it. It's up to you whether you approve them or not, but I'm going to bring them to you. And then if you lease it to them, then you will negotiate with that landlord what they'll pay you. And it could be anywhere from a half a month to a month of rent.
Okay.
And so if it's a $1,000 rental, you might get a $1,000 or a $500 leasing agent fee. And that's something you could do on the side. You could do it as a college student. You could do it as like kind of a new person who's just trying to get into real estate investing. Maybe you do a couple of those a month and make $1,000 to $2,000 a month on the side, and you're getting some money. But I think the more important part is you're learning how to do one of the most important parts of the rental business on somebody else's dime. And I think that's pretty cool.
Okay. So the sweet spot is finding that landlord who maybe has several properties, it just doesn't want to do it themselves anymore. But before they have like a full on property management company that's like doing this whole entire process for them.
Exactly. It could be that landlord, but you could also go to the property managers. I mean, most property managers have leasing agents on on staff, and you can offer to you can offer to be an independent contractor and just say, you know, because I know a lot of property managers who are growing and they're always having to hire staff, and they would rather not hire a new staff member sometimes. They'd rather hire like an independent contractor just to work part time.
Okay. And you think you need a license to do that? It seems like a service that you could provide.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. That's, I mean, everybody do your own homework. But yeah, it's, real estate is pretty heavily regulated just because there's always your bad apples who kind of abuse the situation and who don't do it right and don't follow the rules. So
okay,
I don't think it's a huge hurdle, although it's a little bit bigger hurdle than maybe some other businesses you could start like that. You don't have to have a license to house hack. You don't have to have a license to flip houses. When you start in master leasing, you don't have to have a license if you do it correctly. But with a leasing agent, I'm pretty sure you do.
All right. Well, do your homework. Don't get in trouble. See what it takes to get a license in your state. Like, maybe it's not that big of a burden. So, all right. That brings us to point number five, or idea number five. And this is bird dogging, which is one of my favorite phrases. And this is how you got started. Yeah. Before the fourplex, this is kind of like your foray into the real estate world.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is like a beginner strategy, but it can also be an exit strategy. Like, people just want to kind of get into it at the end. And so, like, the way I got started was, again, I'm graduating from college. I was a biology major and had a German minor. So I could go to a house and tell you what, like, the species of the tree was, and I could tell you what it was called in German. But, like, I had no clue anything about, my dad had owned rental properties growing up. So that's kind of what I was familiar with. But I had never been in the business. I didn't know. So, like, for me, getting started was like, how do I do this? You know, I didn't have any college debt. I had a scholarship to play college football. So luckily, I didn't have debt, but I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have it. So my way to do it was bird dogging. And for those who didn't, like, I grew up in the South, and we'd go out in the country. And so I'm pretty familiar with what bird dogging meant, but bird dogging is kind of like a hunting term where if people were hunting for birds, they would take a dog and the dog would go sniff around and like point, like literally like it would turn like stiff as a board and point to the bush and say, there's the, you know, I smell some birds in there. And then the dog would kind of scare up the birds, and the hunter would shoot the birds and eat, and they'd have dinner that night. So that's the analogy for all the people who didn't grow up in the country like I did. So what you're doing as a bird dog is you are being the person who on the front end of a real estate transaction, you're sniffing out the potential lead for a deal, an investor who is looking to flip and rent properties. That person has money, they're experienced, they're busy, and they don't have time maybe to do like what I was willing to do. I'm just out of college. I can hustle. I can walk neighborhoods like I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I'm willing to send out letters. So all I had was time and hustle. And the benefit for me was I didn't have to learn how to analyze the deal. I mean, I had to know some basics, but I didn't have to learn the entire real estate business. I didn't have to come up with the money. I didn't have to take the risk. All I had to do was go point and say, hey, that seems like a really good deal. What do you think? And they say, yeah, that does seem pretty good. Why don't you give me a phone number, let me talk to the seller. And so if that person buys the property, and here's where the licensing thing comes in again, my understanding of needing to be able to make you're basically making a referral commission. You're not like a regular real estate agent who shows you the house and does all that stuff. All you're doing is passing on a lead to the other person. And that's a pretty standard thing in the real estate industry. And they pay them referral commissions. And so it might be $1,000, might be, in my case, it was $2,000. Every time I brought a deal to this investor who bought it, I got paid $2,000. And that was my incentive to go out and hustle and find the deals.
Yeah. You can imagine you find a couple of those every month, you're doing great on the side.
Yeah.
Especially straight out of school, for sure.
Exactly. And so I made, that was my first year in business, was doing that. I ended up finding 12 deals for the investor. 2000 times 12, that's 24 grand. I lived super cheap. I was frugal and I saved up that money. And then my second year in business, I went off on my own. So I learned a lot from bird dogging. And then I was able to translate that and say, all right, I know how to find deals now. That's one of the hardest things to do. Now let me go partner with somebody who has the money. And then we'll go flip a house. We'll go do that. And I'll make a bigger chunk than 2000. I'll try to make $10,000 on it or $20,000 on it.
Yeah.
On the next one.
And so how'd you get connected with that one investor? Were you going to like investor meetings, or was just somebody that's in your network who you knew was into this business?
So mine was a little easier. I told you my dad was a rental property owner. So
yeah,
I actually moved back into the house back in Noonan, Georgia, where I'm from, and said, Hey, dad, you know, you've been telling me you're looking for deals and hard to find deals. Can I go out and find you some? And I read that book you had on your shelf. And so I actually bought my father properties, but I've had other people who I've helped bird dog who start off by going to real estate investor meetings. Like just go to, you go to like, there's RIA groups and there's Bigger Pockets local meetups in your town. And I think you'll find if you get into this, like the thing that everybody wants is a good real estate deal. Like everybody wants it. Like you could go,
totally.
you could go find like, you know, hey Nick, you know, I heard you're looking for a live-in flip or a house hack, you know, can I go find one for you? I'll be a bird dog for you. Wouldn't you pay somebody $2,000 if they brought you a deal that made you a lot of money?
Oh, for sure.
It's kind of a no-brainer. You got to talk to people, but it's just like any other business. You just start from the end. Like, who's got the money? Who's willing to pay you? Go talk to them. Go give them a value proposition. Give them a pitch. And the pitch in these cases, I think, is pretty clear. Like, all right, I'm going to bring you a deal that's good. And if it's not good, you won't buy it. So it's not a super tough thing to do.
Gotcha. So this one for the bird dog thing, because it's a commission, even if it's just kind of an informal relationship with an investor, pretty much to be official, to be legit, you're going to need a real estate license for this one too.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's, I mean, yeah, if you call it a downside, that's the downside. You're going to have a real estate license, and there's something called a referral brokerage, your typical brokerage like REMAX or whatever, like Keller Williams, those kind of things. Those are your like kind of full service brokerage companies. But there are, if you Google a referral agent brokerage, referral agency, you'll find some that you basically pay them $100 a year. And you'll pay them a piece of your commission. So I think the going rate might be like 20%. So if you make a $2,000 commission, you're going to have to pay your broker 20% of that. So like $400 or so, and liability insurance and stuff like that. And with real estate, there's contracts, you know, there's things involved that people could sue. So that's kind of your cost of entry into that business, is that you're going to have to get a basic real estate license, $300 or $400 and some time. And then you go pay $100 a year to that broker and then give them a small cut of each one. Again, I think that's, are you going to make this a career? Probably not. This is going to be like a 1 or 2 year thing. And if you do it well, like if you bring a bunch of leads to investors, or you could bring leads to other agents. Let's say you talk to a person and they weren't a good candidate for the investor, but they did want to list their house. You could bring that lead to a listing agent. And if they make a commission, they pay you maybe 25% of their commission. You have a big audience of people. You have investors, you have realtors, you might have property managers, somebody wants to rent their house out. So you're a very valuable resource for a lot of people. And I think you can make a good business out of it. But I think the education you get while you learn how to find deals is even more valuable, because you're getting paid to learn how to do it with a very low risk. And then the next step for me, at least, was let's become an investor. Let's buy a house hack. Let's buy a flip. Let's buy a rental property and kind of take that to a little bit to another level.
Yeah, you're working on one of the, like you said, one of the most important skills is finding these diamonds in the rough deals. And absolutely, once you have a little more capital to play with, or once you kind of get your feet wet in the business and learn a little bit more, it's like, yeah, instead of settling for the $2,000 referral commission, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to be the investor on this. I'm going to make the bigger chunk of money, or even turn that into a long-term cash flow property or long-term equity building property.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is fascinating stuff. So Coach, thank you for joining me. You guys can learn more at coachcarson.com. He's got some awesome resources over there. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation, real estate related or not. We just want to hear what you got to say.
Yeah. I always like to tell people to hustle. I know that's just the name of your podcast, but it's helped me. You know, I played football in college. I've been an entrepreneur, and I've done a lot of stupid stuff too. Like, I made a ton of mistakes, and the thing that always kind of pulled me out of there was just being willing to get up early, to stay late. And it's not a forever thing, but I kind of see it as your superpower. You know, if you're willing to go above and beyond and be the first person there and the last person who leaves, and it opens up tons of doors. And it's not a trick. It just takes effort. It takes some want to, but it has definitely made the hustle factor is kind of one of the wild cards that's hard to compete with.
Absolutely, man. That's the name of the show.
I love it. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks. This edition of the Side Hustle Show is brought to you by FreshBooks.com. When you begin to score more clients for your side hustle, you're going to want an organized and professional way to get paid. That's where FreshBooks comes in. Now, one thing FreshBooks really prides themselves on is their customer support. There are no automated phone menus, and everyone in the company actually starts working in the customer service department. So you know what? Let's call them up and see what happens.
Hi, thanks for calling FreshBooks. This is Richard. How can I help you today?
Richard, you got me on the first ring.
For sure. We want to keep you guys on your toes, too. How can I help?
Well, I'll tell you what, you are live on the Side Hustle Show podcast that FreshBooks is sponsoring, and I just wanted to do a live on-air feature to see how quick you guys would pick up the phone. Awesome to meet you. What do you like best about working for FreshBooks?
Definitely culture. And the customer that we get to talk to every day.
Well, very cool, man. Thanks so much for taking the time and for proving the fanatical customer service there.
Sounds good. Have a good day.
You bet. See, they're not messing around. And as a Side Hustle Show listener, you can try FreshBooks completely free for 30 days. Just go to freshbooks.com/sidehustle or enter the Side Hustle Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle to start your 30-day free trial today. All right, my top takeaways from this call with Chad. Number one, your hustle is your superpower. I think that one is worth repeating because our effort is really one of the few things we can control in this world. Takeaway number two was to talk to people. This one is hard for little old introverted me, but the best deals aren't found behind a computer screen. They're out there in the bright and scary real world where you can start conversations and get some down-to-earth intel that most of your would-be competitors aren't going to see or aren't going to hear. And takeaway number three was location, location, location. The number one rule of real estate, right? To keep your risk low, the ugly house in the good neighborhood, as Chad says, is always going to beat the good house in the ugly neighborhood. But curious to hear your thoughts on this one, since real estate is something that touches pretty much everyone. We all got to live somewhere, but with a little more thought and a little more hustle behind that choice, maybe we can reduce our housing expense and begin to make it profitable as well. Be sure to stop by sidehustlenation.com/Chad to download the free PDF highlight reel from this conversation. And that's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show, where you'll meet my guest who quit his full-time engineering job to earn a living selling piano lessons online. It's a fun one. I'll see you then. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to the Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.